On this episode of Risk, you'll hear my friend Calvin S. Cato.
And then she leans in and goes, "Are you a prostitute?"
You'll have to listen to find out. And you'll hear Uriah Westman with a thing or two to share with you about...
Did I ever tell you I was kidnapped?
And you'll hear me, Kevin Allison, on the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
What happens when two people who grew up in a very strange corner of Los Angeles look back and realize just how bizarre their upbringings really were?
They start a podcast, of course.
I'm Ashley Johnson.
And I'm Taliesin Jaffe. Before we became the internet people we are today, we spent our childhoods as working actors, appearing in shows like Growing Pains and films like Mr. Mom.
In our podcast, Weird Kids, we're diving deep into our unique upbringings, our friendship with each other, and all the delightfully odd interests we still carry with us today.
In each episode, we get to share stories of our youth, the things that bring us joy, the problems that we face, and occasionally, the friends we've collected along the way.
If you're a misfit, an outcast, or just a weirdo who loves all things nostalgic and unconventional, come take a seat at our table.
Each week, we'll be releasing previously members-only episodes on YouTube and all major podcast platforms, with new episodes dropping exclusively and ad-free on Beacon.tv.
Fear is the virus is trending on TikTok. Vaccines are poison. Then your yoga teacher says that sex-trafficked children are being sacrificed by satanic liberals. But it's all okay. The Great Awakening is coming. What is happening? Every week on Conspirituality Podcast, we explore the fever dreams that suck friends, family, and wellness gurus down the right-wing cult spiral in a search for salvation.
Okay, folks, this is blooming behind me now on an episode we're calling Exposure Therapy. To start things off, here is a story by the one and only Calvin S. Cato. It was recorded at a Risk Live show in New York just a couple months ago. It's a story we call On Full Display.
If you met me 20 years ago, you would know one thing, which is that I don't take risks. I was a very safe person. I was a very, like, kind of staid child. I felt like I kept everything inside and to myself. And the first time I even got on a stage to do anything, and I mainly do stand-up and I do storytelling and a whole bunch of other stuff. But the first time I even got on a stage, it was 2004. And I got on a stage because I was always writing, like, silly short stories. And friends were like, maybe you should, like, you know, cut these down, make a bit, and do it on stage. And so I did it on stage. It went really well. And I was a part of this group in my college called Punchline. And so we put on 3 shows a year. And every time I did those shows, it always went really well. And so when I graduated in 2006, I was like, I'm going to move back to New York and I'm going to be a comedian. I'm going to make it. I'm going to be a Letterman, which, I mean, now there's literally, it's all crumbling, but that's besides the point. R.I.P. Colbert. And so I came back to New York and I was like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to do stand up and I'm going to be performing everywhere. And like when I would do the shows at college, there would be a lot of people there. And I was not ready for how crushing and sobering New York is. And so the first show I did was at a place in Alphabet City, and I was performing for three people and one very, very sad disco ball. Like, I saw it rotate and it tried to unalive itself. Like, it was a very sad state of affairs. And I learned that, like, in New York, there's, like, a million shows, there's a million performers. It's really hard to just try to make it and get out there. And so I would do open mics and I would do other kinds of shows, but they were all, like, shows that were of that ilk. And I just wanted to get in front of a lot of people again. And so I was talking to my friend Bob about this. And Bob was like, oh, there's a show called The Naked Comedy Show. You should do that. It's super fun. It's going to be really silly. And I was like, oh, Naked Comedy Show. Yeah, sure. And he goes, yeah, it always sells out. And that's where I stopped. I was like, you had me at sellout. You had me at there's going to be a bunch of people. I can do this. And in my head, I thought, it's a naked comedy show, but I assumed it was going to be like, I'd be wearing underwear, like, and I have a lot of silly underwear, okay? I'm queer, all right? I got a lot of thongs, a lot of jock straps. I got, like, I bought some weird shit from Romantic Depot. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know how to do this. I can be cute. And so, and like, back then, I was like 20 pounds lighter, so I really felt like, I was like, I can do everything. Like, I would get free drinks everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I got this. He was like, so this is a guy's name who books a show. It's this guy, I'll call him Randall. And so I reach out to Randall and he goes, oh, just send him a tape. And back then I literally had to send a tape, like a VHS tape. Do you remember VHS tapes, people? Yeah, someone is kind and rewinds. Like that's what I had to do. So I sent him a tape and at the time he literally was like, I don't have a VHS player anymore. Please transcribe your jokes. I transcribe the jokes. I send it to him. I wait a week and I find out, okay, yeah, you're going to be on the show. It's going to be in 2 months. And I'm so excited because I'm like, oh my God, there's going to be people there. And I start inviting all of my friends. And at the time, I worked at an art gallery. And so I told the art gallery, and you know, they're all like, ooh, avant-garde. Like, they're very, how gauche. Like, ooh. So they got very excited. I'm inviting all of these people. And then I run into Bob as, you know, I've been inviting people. I'm writing all these jokes where I'm like, I'm going to write some really funny underwear humor, etc. It's a niche. And so, like, I write all of these jokes. I run into Bob, and I was like, oh, Bob, I got on the Naked Comedy Show. And he goes, oh, I didn't think you would actually follow through with that. And I was like, of course, you had me at the show sells out. There will be people there. And he goes, yeah, but you're going to have to be naked. And I was like, what do you mean naked? Like, underwear? And he's like, no, like, naked, naked. And it was like a record scratch. I was like, I'm sorry, what? Because here's the thing. I'm not a naked in public person at the time. I mean, if anyone knows my act, I'm a big old, like, oversharing hoe. But, like, at the time, I was very chaste. I was, like, at least 3/4 of a virgin. Like, I wasn't really out in the streets like that. I didn't even know what a doc was. Shut up, gays. And so, like, it was a lot. And I had to be like, oh, my God, I'm going to be fully naked on stage. And the only time I've ever been naked in a public space was in college. There was this house called Art House, and every semester they would throw a naked party. And I read about it, and I talked to friends about it. And my friends, I went to a very hippie college, I should explain. Like, very, very, you know, like, they didn't believe in shoes. Everyone was white but had dreadlocks for no reason. Like, it was like that kind of bullshit. Like, a lot of weed, sometimes opium. What? Opium? Anyway, so, like, that was the college I went to. And they were like, oh, you know, this naked party, we should go. And I was like, okay, I'll come with you. And I went, and what was interesting was that they hired a band to play naked. And you get to the house, and everyone inside is already naked, and you're the one with clothes on. And it's a weird feeling to be like, oh, I'm like kind of the odd man out. And like there was a changing room that was upstairs. So we go to the changing room, and I like turned around to like start disrobing. And I was like, I don't think I can do this. And I turned back, and all my friends were like, all right, bye. And I like, got naked and ran downstairs. So I was like, I guess I have to follow suit. So that was the only time I've been naked in a public space. And now I'm going to have to be naked in a public space and do stand-up comedy. And like, you know the old adage where it's like, if you have stage fright, picture everyone naked. This is literally the reverse. Like, I have 400 times more stage fright. Like, I can't do this. So I start disinviting everyone. Like, I'm like, we can't do this. I told my boss, I was like, oh, actually, like, I can't really invite you to the show anymore because, like, it's going to be kind of a weird show. And my boss is like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh, well, because, like, I kind of have to, like, actually be naked. And then she leans in and goes, are you a prostitute? And I had to be like, no, it's just, like, I swear, it's fine. It's all above board. Like, I have W-2s. Like, it's fine. And she was like, but seriously, if you need a raise, like, and I was like, no. I'll have to do this naked show. So I disinvite people, and I consider, I'm like, I need to email Randall and say, I cannot do this show. I just can't do it. But something in me was like, you don't take enough risks. Just do it. Just see it out. But be ready. And so I started exercising. I was shaving. Like, because under this looks like the floor of a barbershop. Like, I'm very hairy, and I was like, I'm going to shave. I'm going to do this. I was eating salad because I was like, I'm not going to eat meat because I don't want to fart on stage. You know what I mean? Like, no mishaps, please. Like, it was like a whole, like, Rocky's montage of being naked on stage. Like, I was like, da-da-da. Like, you know what I mean? Burgess Meredith is cheering me on. Like, it was a lot. And so it gets to the point where, like, it's the day of the show, and I'm like, I've done everything I can. I've prepared. I've now written naked material. I'm like, I gotta just get out there and do it. And so I get to this place, and it's a theater that's, like, close, or not too close to this area, but it's essentially, it's like tiered seating. And so I walk in, and it's like an 80-person theater, and there's tiered seating, and it's really dawning on me that I'm like, oh my God, people are gonna see me naked from, like, multiple angles. Because there's the top seating, so there's like this, and that's never a good angle. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's good in theory on Instagram, but not in real life. And then there's, like, down here, and that's a, ooh, because, you know, what if the balls are looking a little, like, you know? Like, I had to think about all of this, because, you know, I don't want to be doing upshots now, like, and I got to be naked. And so I'm, like, thinking about this and obsessing about this. And then I go to the back, because it's the dressing room, which they cleverly call the undressing room. Hum, 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 hum. And I go to the dressing room and I see the other comics. It's all men. They're all white. I guess women weren't allowed to be naked back in the mid-2000s. But, like, it was all white men. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is, like, it's, like, really setting in. The panic is setting in. And I'm like, but I got to do this. I got to do this. I got to do this. And, like, I keep, like, being there. I'm still clothed. And I'm like, but I, like, kind of can peek out and, like, see the audience. And I'm watching the audience grow and grow and grow. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is a thing I just have to get through, you know? And the guy, Randall, is a nudist. So he's, like, very comfortably being naked. And then Randall runs it with this other guy whose name is, I'll call him David, who's, like, kind of a semi-nudist or, I don't know, nudist in training. I don't know what you call it. Nudist associate, essentially. So he's, like, mostly naked. And I'm still, like, I feel like a housewife where I'm like, oh, I'm just cold. I need a tea. Like, I'm very covered up. And, like, the other performers are, like, starting to get, like, in various states of undress. And the one thing I do notice is that I'm like, you know what? Like, yes, they're, like, partially naked. But I'm like, it's fine. Everything's going to be okay. We will get there. And so Randall goes out first as the host of the show. And he starts off the show by, like, he tells a joke and then does a whole handstand. And Randall is older, so the balls and the gravity are, it's like, I was like, these are like mansion door knockers that are like out here, but you're brave enough to do that. So he goes out, and then after Randall is the other guy who comes out, and he like has a cigarette unlit and sticks it between his penis and his testicles and does a whole bit being like, hi, I'm Joe Camel, which honestly, it killed. I was like, this is great physical humor. Very funny. Also, kids don't smoke. But, like, and then it's me. And so I'm like, okay, this is my time. I'm getting undressed. I'm hyping myself up. I'm like, listen, you did everything you could. Okay, you didn't shave your pubes into a lightning bolt, but it's going to be cute. It's fine. Don't worry about it. And I get on stage, and I immediately get on the stage, and there are four friends right in the front row. And so I, like, freeze for a second because I'm like, oh my God. And one of these friends is someone I slept with, which is a separate story. We do not have time for that. But I was like, oh my God. But then I was like, so hi, I'm the diversity hire. And people laughed. Because they're like, finally, non-white penis. This is great. And then I was like, I'm not going to lie, because I did have a couple of drinks to get ready. And I was like, listen, because there's no way I was going to get out here sober. And people are laughing. And I was like, this is not as drunk as the drunkest I've ever been. And I was like, the drunkest I've ever been was one time where, like, I got so drunk that, have y'all ever been so drunk that you're laying down and you're like, why does it feel like the room's spinning? And why does it feel like this bed's moving? And then you realize you're in an ambulance set. And so I said that as a bit of an ad lib, and people laughed at that too. And as I kept going, I just sort of forgot that I was naked. Like, all the fright was gone. I was like, you just keep going, and it just, it's kind of like a costume. And I forgot about all the angles that were coming at me. I was like, it doesn't matter. This is perfect. And so I finished the show, and I would have taken a bow, but again, the angles. I was like, I can't, no. But I finished the show, and it just gave me, like, a big boost of confidence. And I felt like, you know what? Like, I can really do anything. Because I feel like if I can put myself out there and bear myself literally, I can do it figuratively as well. Thank you so much.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Risk. This is Simon Osterholt behind me now, and we just heard from Calvin S. Cato, whose debut comedy album is called Disney Single, and it's streaming on platforms in September of 2026. You can keep up with Calvin on Instagram at Calvin S. Cato. Folks, if Risk is something you like having in your life, please help us keep it up and running. We really do need it. There's lots to gain from becoming a member at patreon.com/risk or by increasing your donation amount there. You can learn more about how to send one-time donations at risk-show.com/support. Next up, a story from Uriah Westman. This one was recorded at a Risk live show in LA a couple years ago, actually. There's something especially funny about this recording that you and I can check in about afterward, and appropriately enough, it's a story we call funny because it's true.
So for me, it's wild to actually be on a storytelling show. And that's because 2 years ago, I moved to LA to be a comedian. But not just a comedian, a one-liner comedian. And you can't get farther from storytelling than one-liners. But it was through the process of going to really bad sets did I realize that maybe one-liners aren't the way to go. And there's one particular set that was the worst that had me have that identity crisis. And this was telling one-liners in a comedy show in the back of an ice cream shop. ice cream is a very, very happy treat to have. And I went up there doing my one-liners, and my one-liners will go like this. Hey, I'm not really good at dating. I'm still getting catfished on MySpace, hey. I didn't put any work into a relationship. Guess I was just a lazy boy. Hey. I said A after every single joke. Unlike now, though, no one was laughing. I would say a joke, and all I would see is like 10 people licking ice cream cones. And not enjoying it. My comedy that I sat down and wrote, and I'm like, people are gonna love this, hated it so much. The joy of sugar and cream was taken away. So I'm like, I gotta go back to the drawing board here. Okay, I loved one-liners. So what I'm thinking? Oh, I'm gonna add a slide whistle to my act. So I'll go up there and be like, hey, I'm white and I drive a Prius. We're both honkies, honk honk. My Prius has a lot of great protections. It protects the environment, protects me from marriage. Woo! Whoop. And I was shocked it didn't work. I don't know why. So I seeked out advice from the GM who works here, is also a comedian. And I'm like, these one-liners aren't working. So he's like, talk about yourself. Say, what's something I don't know about you? Well, the only reason why I'm named Uriah is because in the 80s and 90s, my parents were in a doomsday cult. And the leader of that cult told my parents to get together because they're twin flames, the cult version of soulmates, have three kids, and name one of them Uriah. So he's like, you were in a cult? I'm like, well, not exactly. It was three cults. And he's like, three cults? What? Why the hell are you doing one-liners? But I kind of realized the reason why I was doing one-liners is if I'm doing a character and just telling jokes, they're mad at the character. If I go up there and tell jokes that are true about my life and they don't laugh, that would hurt a lot more than people not enjoying ice cream. So actually here at The Lyric, they have an amazing story telling open mic called Chill Vibes, where I told my first story. And this is where I got to reveal things to get more and more comfortable. And because this first cult, it was a Christian fundamentalist and New Age cult. And what that means is it just steals from a bunch of different religions, like a smash and grab, taking anything of value. Hey, let's take some Eastern spirituality. Ooh, Catholicism, Christianity, Buddhism. They were the Long Island iced tea of cults. Because if you put everything together, you can barely taste the homophobia. Then I realized, oh, wait, I can still tell stories about my life and they can still be jokes. They're not like, there's not two different options. Now I just hide the one-liners. But as I got more comfortable, I realized, oh, there's dark things that I didn't remember. So part of this cult believed is that demons were real. And aliens were real, and half the people on Earth were actually demons and aliens, entirely energized by rock music, negative energy, and abortions. So it became a doomsday cult in which my dad helped build these bomb shelters, so I don't think they would work. Because my dad developed condos that were built so bad they de-gentrified the neighborhood. And then the world didn't end, but my parents' marriage did. So my mom started using the ideology of the cult and calling my dad a demon. And whatever reality your parents present to you, you're going to believe it. And when I would go and hang out with my dad, he'd let's watch movies. I'm like, this isn't what a demon would do. But then But then he would serve cereal with water? And that's the type of thing a demon would do? And to get rid of the demons, for bedtime routine, my mom would come in with a sword blessed by the leader of the cult, have me lie on my stomach, and she would scrape it down my spine to get rid of the demons. You know how if you were a kid and you thought there was a monster in the closet, and then if you had good parents, your parents would reassure you there's no monster in the closet? My parents would tell me there is a monster in the closet. That's because you're listening to Linkin Park, allowing negative energy into your soul. My parents were saying my nightmares were real. But through all of that, though, is I developed a sense of humor and comedy, and that's how I could relate to people, because I couldn't relate to people bringing up demons. And then, again, the GM here is like, what I did for my first special is I booked a date 9 months ahead of time because I knew then I had to do it. So basically, as soon as I started formatting my story of my life, I booked a date here, May 11th, and had to finish. I didn't have it written, but had to have the show done. And I started remembering more and more things. And I walked up to him and I'm like, did I ever tell you I was kidnapped? If he was a cartoon character, there would be steam coming out of his ears. So I'm going up there, hey, how's it going? Hey, what am I? So during my parents' custody battle, my mom took us out of the school without telling my dad about it, took us across state lines, and in this moment, I didn't realize, but I was being kidnapped by my own mom. And I didn't know that was possible. But then we get to Virginia Beach, and I remember the date, because we were about to go see the Lizzie McGuire movie. May 3rd, 2003. But right before we're about to go, the cops show up, Child Protective Services show up, and arrest my mom. And then what my dad does is he comes and picks us up, doesn't explain what's going on, but instead gets a two-disc CD collection of Shania Twain up. And from Virginia Beach to Montana, we're listening to two-disc CD with hidden tracks, with hits such as Up, 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 It Only Goes Up From Here. And man, I feel like a woman. But what was great is through all this and working out all these, like, the darkness here is I realized something. There's this quote, and I'll kind of paraphrase here, that all roots must reach hell in order to get to heaven. But I don't believe in heaven, I don't believe in hell, but I do believe in the idea of roots. And what my roots always were with moving around so much was my comedy, and that's how I connected with people. But within that dirt and the darkness there is where my trauma was. And I was worried that if I talked about that, that would define who I was. But really what happens is when I'm able to talk about that trauma and shed light on it, something beautiful can blossom out of it. And that's what will define me, is the art, not the trauma. I've been Uriah, thank you.
This is Risk. This is Jim Swim behind me now. And we just heard from Uriah Westman and someone in the audience that night who our audio editing team would like to advise go to jail.
Go to jail, mama.
My trauma. Hey, I'm not really good at dating. Demons were real. Darkness is where my trauma was.
jail.
Hey, I'm waiting.
I think this lady should actually go to jail.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. 100%.
Damn. All right. I think that pretty much settles that. You know, we love everybody who comes out to Risk Live shows. It's just that once every 17 years or so, we have to make a little song advising one of them to, you know, go to jail. And folks, Uriah Westman has a solo show called Three Cults Walk Into a Bar. Forbes magazine said it was a physiological thrill. You can learn more about it over at Uriah's Instagram at Uriah Jokes.
And what rhymes with jokes?
Folks, my next online storytelling workshops start on September 2nd. That's the Wednesday evenings one. And September 13th, that's the Sunday mornings one. Here's another of my current students sharing their feelings about it.
Hey, DB Frick here. I've been taking Kevin Allison's class for almost 2 years now. I'm in my sixth session. I love waking up on Sundays. It's like church. Getting to network and tell my stories is such a great opportunity. And storytelling is probably one of the most important things that anybody could learn how to do. It will help you through every part of your life. So I really think this class in particular could help you. Kevin Allison's class has been amazing for me and has taught me so much.
And you can learn all about my online storytelling workshops by emailing me at kevin@risk-show.com. Folks, today's the day. Go to jail.